Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
What is up, everybody?
And welcome back to Mile High Podcast, episode 346. I am your host, Kendall.
I'm your host, Josh.
And we are joined, as always, by our production team, Janelle and Ian.
Hello. I missed you all.
Yeah, Janelle, you're back.
I am back.
You feeling good? You ready for this?
Feeling great. Let's go.
Good. Glad you're here. How are you feeling today, Ian?
Good.
Good, yeah?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
That's all I got for you.
Well, yeah, I don't have much to report either. But today we are covering a very peculiar case, very mysterious and confusing, and we are left with really no answers, which is very frustrating. But we have a couple of theories to present, and I'm curious to know everyone's thoughts, because you guys always come through with a lot of things that I hadn't yet considered. So maybe one of you guys can clear some stuff up for us, because there were some things, too, that we're confused about. We're going to be talking about the very mysterious death of Blair Adams.
Yeah, a lot of interesting things that play out in this one. Some of them kind of bizarre. Blair was somebody who was, you know, doing well in life by all accounts, and randomly he decided to quit his job. He pulled out all of his valuables, all of his cash, out of his safety deposit box, and then left the countries from Vancouver, Canada, or Surrey to be more exact. But then he comes to the United States and kind of goes on this road trip that nobody really knows for sure where he was going. There's a couple ideas of where he might be going, but then he ends up dead in Knoxville, Tennessee. And the scene there is also very confusing. So just a case full of questions.
Yeah.
But ultimately, his family wants to know, you know, what happened to him and who's responsible for his death. And it's still an unsolved case this day. So let's go ahead and dive into it, because there's quite a bit of ground to cover here.
Now, not much is known about Blair's early life, unfortunately. We do know that he was born Robert Dennis Blair Adams on December 28th, 1964, and he was raised in Surrey near Vancouver, British Columbia in Canada. Now, Surrey itself is more of a suburb of Vancouver, and it's considered well within the metropolitan area. And although it's the region's second largest population behind Vancouver, most people who live in Surrey do so to raise their families while they commute into the city for work. And we know that Blair had siblings, although very little is known about his birth father. His mother eventually married a man who owned this prefab construction company that operated in Vancouver and Germany, which is important to note, though his name is still unknown. His mother, Sandra, describes Blair as, quote, kind and ambitious. However, he had a different reputation in Vancouver. He had numerous arrests for assaults, typically stemming from bar fights, in addition to drug possession and use. However, it's unclear what kind of drugs Blair was into at this time. But by 1994, Blair wanted to turn his life around. He got completely sober and he joined Alcoholics Anonymous and maintained his sobriety the rest of his life. He even entered a few relationships during this time. His mom later revealed to Knox News that he was involved in a homosexual relationship with a roommate, but it's unclear if this has been confirmed by anyone else. And all she said was, quote, They acted a little strangely and giggled a lot, and it was kind of odd. But then he went back to a heterosexual relationship after that. So that whole bit of the story, that's pretty much all we, that is all we know. And I don't know how, I don't know. It's confusing.
Yeah, like I was talking to you guys about earlier, I feel like that specific part of it, that quote from his mom kind of gets drummed up a lot in online forum posts, even though it's like we really have no idea what the extent of this relationship was.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it possibly could be important information, but I think for the most part, it's pretty relevant, and it's strange that it's brought up so much.
Right, right.
And we don't even know if it's true. Right. Yeah.
But in 1995, Blair got a job with his stepfather's construction company, SS Cedar Homes, which took him to Germany to work on an assisted living facility near Frankfurt. While attending a party in November of that year, Blair met an unnamed woman who had become his girlfriend. And again, going back to the forum posts, there's some old ones about this girlfriend, and contributors mentioned that she was of questionable age for a man in his 30s. But there's no other sources that cite what that age would have been. Maybe it was just, you know, she was in her 20s or something, or
she could have been
18,
older than
19,
him, a lot
or,
older than
yeah,
him.
Yeah. I mean, we have no idea. So again, just another detail that's out there, but does it have any real importance to this case? We're not sure.
I think because there's such little information available and so many holes that people try to fill it in with these things that like maybe this, maybe that,
right.
But for the most part, they seem irrelevant.
Yeah, I would agree. The woman would later tell detectives investigating Blair's case that he was a gentleman. But some others who knew Blair while in Germany described him as, quote, abrasive and confrontational, and that he fought with various coworkers at the facility. When he returned to Surrey in early 1996, friends and family noted how much Blair had really turned his life around. Aside from maintaining his job with his stepfather's construction company, as well as his sobriety, Blair had managed to save at least $6,000 in Canadian dollars, in addition to several thousand in gold, platinum, and jewelry. He had a safety deposit box that contained actual gold bars, which you don't hear about that anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how you go about getting a gold bar.
Or, I mean, safety deposit boxes are really rare too. But this is 96, so.
Yeah, we were very young, couple years old.
Yeah, how do you go about getting a gold bar? I'm curious. Just Google that. How to get a gold bar.
I wonder, I think some pawn shops sell
gold
bars.
Oh, yeah, maybe a pawn shop. Where do you go to buy gold bars? Wasn't there
online
a big
dealers.
Boom in gold, like, not that long? I remember when I was a kid, there was always commercials.
Always commercials. I think there still are. Like, if you're old, transfer all of your savings into gold now.
Yeah, or, like,
safer.
Send in all your gold jewelry and we'll convert it into a bar or something like that.
It's, like, online dealers mostly, I think.
Huh. Interesting.
Or major retailers like Costco or Walmart, which I don't know.
Oh, you can just go pick one up at Wally World?
No, I doubt it. They probably work with some sort of dealer.
Mm. Like, Walmart carries everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's this theory behind it of gold will never go out of style. And so if you have some gold.
Not out of style, but it'll never lose its value.
It's a figure of speech, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I think somebody said that before.
Well, I think there's still people that really, I mean, they're probably right. Aren't they saying that the dollar's crashing?
Yeah, well, if currency.
It's like always been a narrative.
Disappears. And
they
we go back.
Gold.
We go back to how, you know, back to trading and, you know, we're not using any sort of monetary system. Gold is going to be worth a lot or it'll be worth nothing because nobody's going to need gold. You know,
true.
But there's an investment strategy out there where a lot of people invest in heavy metals, especially gold, silver, things like that, because some say that it's more stable and a better investment long term because it doesn't fluctuate as much.
Makes sense.
But
so if you needed to pay someone, you just like cut a sliver of your bar.
Well, no, you're investing in like gold and like big funds that own. Gold.
Okay, so you're not like
companies and things. You're
doing
not
your
actually
daily bartering.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like Fort Knox has a bunch of gold bars in it, I believe, unless they moved it.
I didn't know that.
That the Federal Reserve put a bunch of gold there to sort of back up the U.S. currency. But I think we've overprinted way beyond our actual gold is worth.
Supposedly
at this
they
point.
Got billions of dollars worth of gold in there.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, so the fact that Blair had gold, he's probably like, well, this is a great, you know, kind of diversify my assets, or it was a part of some transaction that he was involved in that he obtained this gold bar. But we're probably reading too much into the gold here.
It's just interesting. You don't hear of it very often.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just one bar, it was multiple bars.
But going back to our timeline here, in July of 1996, everyone was very confused when Blair changed from the outgoing and successful individual, and all of a sudden he became this paranoid and kind of confusing man. Like, everybody was kind of like, whoa, what happened to Blair? Because he started basically saying that somebody is out to kill me. And he started just acting very, very paranoid.
And maybe that was for a good reason. Maybe someone actually was out to kill him and he was freaking out.
Absolutely.
Which anyone would, right? So 2 years into attending weekly AA meetings during the summer of 1996, Blair just suddenly stopped going. And this was really surprising to everyone because he didn't seem to be drinking or doing drugs again. And there was really no reason for this sudden, abrupt departure from the group. But still, he stopped going without alerting anyone, including his sponsor and group leaders, which is very strange. And then it continued to get weird because he started to neglect the job that he had previously boasted about.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Suddenly, he stopped remembering to lock up the job sites for ongoing construction projects and showed up extremely late into the day. And his friends, family, and coworkers described him as scatterbrained. He was a, quote, cheerful guy only weeks before, but then suddenly he started having these frequent and pretty wild mood swings. And he blamed it on a lack of sleep. But to a select few, he acknowledged that someone was out to kill him and told his mom that someone was, quote, spreading rumors about him. And then only a few days after he stopped going to the AA meetings, he suddenly just quit his job, which just a couple of weeks prior, he was proudly telling people about. And it was very strange. And the only thing that he said was he didn't know if he could carry on here. And when he didn't pick up his final paycheck, very, very strange, Blair's coworker suggested that he should see a doctor. On July 5th, 1996, Blair withdrew all of his money from his Canadian bank account before he went to his safety deposit box and withdrew all of his valuables, including gold and silver jewelry, sunglasses, more cash, and literal bars of gold. In addition to the valuables from his safety deposit box, he had at least $6,000 in pure cash as well.
Later that day, Blair told his mother that something was bothering him. However, he didn't say anything specific, and then just decided to take a last-minute trip to Courtenay, British Columbia, to visit his uncle, who incidentally wasn't even home. The drive from Surrey to Courtenay is at least 4 hours, which I think for most of us, a spur-of-the-moment four-hour drive is something some of us would do, but for others, especially if you're going to see a specific person, you don't even know if they're home and you're just going to make that four-hour drive, I think, somebody might be like, oh, that's kind of odd, but maybe it wasn't odd for him. 2 days later, Blair drove his Chevy Chevette to Victoria in an attempt to board a ferry that would take him to Seattle. However, he was flagged by immigration officials. Since Blair was a single man traveling alone with insane amounts of cash and valuables, they assumed that he must be a drug smuggler. On top of that, he lied when they asked him if he had a criminal history, despite having numerous convictions on drug and assault charges. After being denied entry onto the ferry, Blair made the rounds across Vancouver. He visited one of his girlfriends, a friend in New Westminster, and his mother in Surrey. He cried and broke down to his mom and girlfriend about quitting the construction job, despite, really feeling proud for working with the company throughout Germany and Canada. However, to his friend, he cryptically told them that he needed to cross the border into the United States because someone was out to kill him, though Blair never said who. And we want to show you this clip of Sandra, his mother, explaining her conversation with Blair on this episode of Unsolved Mysteries from 1997.
Blair's cheery demeanor began to crack and buckle. Now his mood swung unpredictably from agitated paranoia to pensive withdrawal.
Something was obviously very much the matter. He hadn't been sleeping well. Something was wrong. I asked him numerous times what was wrong, and he said, "Oh, I don't think I should tell you about it." And to this day, I don't know what it is.
That would just drive me so insane as a mother, you know, especially in hindsight, now that he's gone, to just never know what he was talking about. And was it something that was in his head, or was this a real threat that he was, you know, very scared of?
Well, obviously, it's interesting from the perspective of if his life was really in jeopardy, why would he not tell, like, the people closest to him what was going on?
Well, because he might be putting them in danger.
Right, true, true. Yeah, that's definitely true. But even then, like, if you knew something could happen, you might want to tell somebody, right?
Right. But, I mean, it's just so hard to know what it was, because it could have been something that he did that he'd be ashamed to tell his mom about.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Maybe it's not the fact that he thinks somebody's out to kill him. It could be something else.
Or they're out to kill him because of something he did.
Right. Right. Well, and again, he probably doesn't want to alarm his mother, you know, have her worried for him, even though that would probably worry her without knowing anyways. But yeah, all very bizarre.
And it is possible that he told someone and that someone has never come forward because it's something that he swore them to secrecy on, something that they knew he wouldn't want the world to know.
Yeah.
Or it really was all in his head.
Are you somebody at the end of a long, busy day when you've just been dealing with nothing but hell all day? And you're like, man, would love something to take the edge off of my whole mindset. Well, for some people, that can be chocolate chip cookies and a glass of milk. But for others, it can be a tall glass of delicious, mouth-watering wine. And maybe you're one of those people who likes to lay in bed naked, just letting it all air out at the end of a long day, sipping on your favorite Chardonnay. Well, that's me. Nothing better than unwinding with a delicious glass of wine. But the one thing I hate doing is buying wine, because I know absolutely nothing about wine. I barely know what it is. But thanks to our sponsor today, Naked Wines, I've learned a lot about wine, because I don't really need to know that much, because they teach me everything I need to know about the different types of wine. And the wine from Naked Wines comes from independent winemakers. So you're supporting small businesses out there making some of the world's best quality wine for such a great price. You're going to fall over after hearing this. Right now, you can get 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99. I mean, what an incredible deal. This is really, really good stuff. I love it. Kendall loves it. I love to drink it. I love to cook with it. Because maybe you're somebody out there who doesn't like to drink wine. You don't like the taste. Well, if you haven't had a white wine sauce with pasta or seafood, you are absolutely missing out. I made a delicious linguine and clam pasta for Kendall for Mother's Day, and she was just salivating over it because of how delicious that white wine sauce, and that was thanks to Naked Wines. So now is the time to join the Naked Wines community. You just head over to nakedwines.com/milehigher, click enter voucher, and put in our code milehigher for both the code and the password. Can't forget about the password. For 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99, and you get shipping included. That is an amazing deal. That's $100 off your first 6 bottles of wine at nakedwines.com/milehigher, and use code and password milehigher for 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99. In an interview from 2020, Blair's mother, Sandra, said that Blair was always, quote, kind, and that she didn't think he was suffering from any sort of mental illness during this time. He spent the night of July 7th at his mother's house before packing up his bags the next morning. And in that same interview, Sandra said that Blair was trying to get to the United States for the 1996 Summer Olympic Games in Atlanta, which began on July 19th. However, what's really weird about this detail is that she never mentioned it to anyone in the over 20 years since Blair's death, including to police investigating his case.
Which is so strange. I have so many questions about that.
Yeah, I really wonder if it's something that, like, she, because, you know, in that 1997 Unsolved Mysteries episode, like, she's obviously very involved with the interview and everything. And
right.
The change to this one, I wonder if it's just in the time since she's thought about these conversations she had with Blair around this time. And I bet, you know, he was probably rambling. He was probably very confused. And I wouldn't be surprised if he said something about the Olympics are going to be in Atlanta, blah, blah, blah. And then in the time since, maybe she put more importance on that. That's like my only guess as to why she didn't bring it up until 2020.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the only guess you could really have. Yeah, it could have been something where it didn't even dawn on her until later. Like, it came up into her mind. We did have that conversation, and she didn't even realize it at first. Especially when, you know, your child's missing. Sometimes your thoughts can be all over the place, and you just wouldn't think about every conversation you've ever had until you've had time to really mull it over.
But that's a long time.
I know. It is. It's strange.
That's a long, long time.
I wonder if there are any other reasons why she didn't tell anybody.
Well, an interesting coincidence is that these Olympic Games were attacked by Eric Robert Rudolph, who planted bombs in both the Olympic Park in Atlanta and Birmingham, Alabama, which ended up killing two and injuring hundreds of others.
I am shocked. I had no idea that that happened. I mean, I was like 3 years old, but just I've never heard of that. God, I'm surprised. These look horrible, the pictures from it. I'm surprised only two people died. I mean, hundreds were injured, but. And that wasn't the only big trip that Blair had planned. Earlier on July 7th, he went to a travel agency. You don't hear about that anymore. And spent $1,700 on round trip tickets to Frankfurt, Germany. However, he refunded the tickets later that day, saying that the person he planned to visit got sick. Very strange. But his German girlfriend wasn't expecting him, and he never told her about a potential visit. Now, when he did speak to his German girlfriend, he was more specific about what he was fearing. He said that former co-workers from Germany, the ones who described him as violent, had recently returned from overseas, and he was scared of running into them. However, he did not say that they were going to kill him like he had previously said to his Canadian friend. Now, Blair was not heard from for the remainder of July 8th. Then on July 9th, he was spotted by authorities attempting to cross the border into Washington on foot. And authorities stopped him initially because he matched the description of an auto thief, and a stolen blue car was found just near the area where he was trying to cross. And authorities stated that he appeared dazed and anxious, although he proclaimed his innocence, and they released him back into Canada after finding no evidence to tie him to the auto theft. And what's interesting is that just the day before, on July 8th, a friend of Blair's had seen him driving an unfamiliar blue car around Vancouver. And we don't know any more about that, but it's certainly a strange coincidence.
Yeah, it's very, like, if we were to take this as fact, like, Blair stole that car and just stole it to drive around Vancouver. Like, why would he do that?
Right.
You know?
Unless he's just really not in his right mind. He wasn't thinking through anything he was doing. But we don't even know if that actually happened or if that sighting, you know, is accurate. But after his run-in with authorities on July 9th, Blair drove his Chevette to the Vancouver airport. He ditched it there and then rented a Nissan Altima. And finally, he made it across the border into Seattle. Now, in Seattle, he drove to the airport again, ditched the Altima that he had rented back in Vancouver, and purchased a one-way ticket to Washington, D.C. for $800, even though a round-trip ticket was half the price. So why would he make this strange decision? There's a possibility that Blair had entered a state of psychosis, making completely irrational decisions based on his overall fear and anxiety of being chased. Or if someone was really trying to come after Blair, maybe he made the decision to throw them off his tail. But regardless of the reasoning behind that choice, Blair's flight landed early in the morning on Wednesday, July 10th, and he rented a Toyota Camry at 6:45 a.m. and began driving south to Knoxville, Tennessee.
Which, again, this is just another bizarre decision that Blair made when he got to the U.S. And to his mother's point, Knoxville would have been on the way to his potential final destination of the Summer Olympics in Atlanta. But if that was truly the end goal, why not just book a ticket directly there, right? Instead of attempting a nearly 10-hour drive from Washington, D.C. to Atlanta on little to no sleep. Again, it points to the fact that Blair was probably not thinking clearly, but there is a chance that if he was on the run from someone, all of these strange decisions would have been to cover up his movements, which is really like the only other explanation other than, you know, he's just not in the right state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. At this point, I lean more towards these are sort of calculated moves on his part in order to evade somebody he thinks is coming after him potentially.
Yeah, I really tend to lean that way too. Like, I know his behavior was so strange. I just think it's weird how suddenly all of that happened and how he just one day was acting this way. And I don't know, maybe the paranoia was for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, like, if again, we're going to take Blair's word as the total truth, like he is being chased by people. If he's making these decisions to throw someone off his tail, that speaks to the fact that who's ever following him is really good at tracking him.
Yeah.
You know, and yes. that would instill a level of fear because, like, most people are not going to be paying that close of attention to, like, if you're booking a round trip versus a one-way ticket, you know.
So right, yeah.
If he really is evading people who are paying attention to that sort of stuff like that, yeah, this is serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which
God.
Means there's some scary individuals after him.
Right.
Who he's concerned with have the ability to find him if he's not super careful and calculated with his movements and sort of erratic with his movements. It's difficult when talking about, you know, one's mental health, especially with his mother saying that she, as far as she knew, she didn't see or know anything about any mental health struggles,
right?
Which we all know doesn't mean there wasn't any going on.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as we know, there's no indications from anybody that he was going through some type of mental health struggle. So unless this was potentially that came on suddenly or something, which is also possible, it seems to me that he is trying to evade a danger of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Because then at Zion Crossroads near Highway 250 in Troy, Virginia, Blair accidentally backed his car into another man's vehicle, causing minor damage. The man would later say that Blair was very friendly and apologetic about the accident, but that he was clearly in a hurry. Because again, his interactions also with other people are pleasant. You know, people are like, you know, he's coherent. He's not like, you know, not doing weird things, saying weird things. He's like, I'm sorry, but he's clearly in a hurry. So I just feel like maybe there'd be some other indicators coming from other people who had interactions with him, especially while he's on the run, if potentially this is a mental health episode of some sort.
And that's at this point.
True.
In the case.
True.
I mean, there are other reported strange interactions that people had, but they do describe him still as being pretty pleasant, just seeming anxious and confused and in a hurry.
Which, and he's already gotten this far as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already down in Virginia. Later that same day at 5:30 p.m., Blair was seen at a gas station on Strawberry Plains Pike. He had stopped there to fill up his car, but couldn't get inside because his key no longer worked to unlock the vehicle. Blair alerted the gas station attendant to his situation and called Interstate Repair Service driver Gerald Sapp to respond to the scene. And when Gerald arrived, he immediately noticed what Blair's problem was. He was using the wrong key. Since Blair had just ditched the Nissan Altima he rented in Vancouver at the airport in Seattle, he never properly returned the car or gave the rental company their key back, so he still had that on him. Gerald told him, hey, dude, that's the wrong key, but Blair refused to believe him. Gerald said, quote, I asked him to look in his pockets, and I said, if you drove this thing up here, you got to have another key in your pockets. And he wouldn't look, so I thought he was nuts. He was bound and determined that he had a key that he needed for that car. Now, it's important to note that in other reports, Blair did check inside his pockets and actually turned them out, revealing that they were both empty. And while this may seem insignificant now, it could be essential to figuring out what happened to Blair later that night. So obviously, this is a weirder interaction.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like maybe he's just in such a hurry that he's not realizing like what keys he's looking at, and the keys look similar or something like that. I'd imagine that Toyota key and the Nissan key look very similar. And he's just like frantically like, I got to get back on the road, that he's not thinking clearly through the situation that's right in front of him.
Especially the fact that he was like, this is the wrong key. And Blair just was like, no, I just didn't want to believe him. This is the key. And was like so set on that. It's yeah, very strange.
And I will say that account of it from Gerald also comes from a 2020 interview. So the account that he told Blair, like, hey, man, check in your pockets. And Blair was like, no, that comes from a more recent interview. Whereas like in earlier reports, like in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, he's like, that's where it's shown like he's overturning his pockets and like checking inside.
The reenactments.
Right. Sure. Right.
Lovely.
Yeah. Great reenactments. But so that's why I tend to trust the Gerald's more contemporary version of events, where it's like, man, look inside your pockets. And he's, and Blair just says like, no, these are the,
which makes you think if he doesn't want to open his pockets, was there something else in there that he didn't want Gerald to see?
Right.
Maybe. And that's pure speculation. So Gerald called for a wrecker driver to tow the Camry to an auto shop and then dropped Blair off at a nearby Fairfield Inn, which was only a few blocks away. And when Blair got out of Gerald's truck, he initially forgot his bag containing his gold bars and jewelry. And thankfully, Gerald was a good guy and ran it over to him and then drove home, expecting the strange ordeal, the interaction that he was having with Blair to just be over at that point. And Gerald would later say, quote, the guy was not all there. He didn't appear to be messed up. He didn't appear to be on drugs, but his mind wasn't functioning correctly for some reason. The Fairfield Inn was recently opened and was across the highway from another site that a hotel was in the process of being built on. And even at the Fairfield, Blair continued to show odd behavior. I mean, really every interaction he had with anyone during this time that we know of, he was acting strangely. For one, when he's at the Fairfield Inn, he entered and exited the hotel lobby 5 times within 40 minutes. And we will put some CCTV overlay so that you can see that for yourself if you're watching this episode. Very strange.
Is it that strange, though?
I think so. To enter and exit, and he hadn't even got a room at that point. He's just walking in and out of the hotel. Maybe he's maybe he's thinking, and temperature wise, it kept getting hot and cold. I don't know. I can't really think of anything. I kind of want to look at that video. Let's just pull it up, and I just want to remind myself.
There's so many cases where there's people acting similarly to this.
Yeah, see this?
Yeah.
Of course it could be something that's not strange, but I think considering all of his other behaviors and his interactions with people, this stands out as strange.
Which this is on a loop. It's not this many.
Yeah, yeah. But just so you can see it. So then when he did purchase a room finally at around 7 p.m., he used a $100 bill and then just walked away before the clerk could even get him his change. And she tried to get Blair's attention, but he just walked straight to the door, almost as if he didn't hear her or didn't want the change. And then throughout the night, the clerk repeatedly tried to call his room with no success. And it seemed like Blair never actually went into his hotel room once during that night. Very, very bizarre. So a hotel employee, Tika Hartsfield, said that Blair seemed, quote, paranoid, and that he was just nervous, agitated, and expecting someone to come in on him, even though there wasn't anybody there. I don't know who he was looking for, but he was waiting for someone to walk in for him. So yeah, really every account that people have of their experience or their time being around Blair is just pretty much along the same lines.
Which, is it paranoia or is he still just being extra careful that he's not being followed?
That's the big question here. Nobody knows.
See, I think that is the interesting thing with all of these weird accounts with Blair is that, like, yeah, you could definitely say, like, this is an instance of just paranoia, psychosis, whatever. But nothing is too far outside the realm of being like, oh, he's being followed and either trying to avoid them, check for them, or throw them off. You know, I think it's strange how all of them could fit into either box and you wouldn't think too much of it.
Right.
Well, yeah. Especially because in my mind, I'm like, you're going to appear weird and strange to people if you're fearing for your life and you're so paranoid that they're right around the corner that you're constantly, but that doesn't mean you're mentally not all there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like based on the circumstances, I could imagine I'd be same way. I'd be in and out constantly looking around my surroundings and not wanting to take the time during any interactions with people to take my eyes off of where the potential danger could be coming from. So mm-hmm. in my mind, I'm like, maybe he's very worried, or maybe it's another sort of step to set up a decoy, you know what I mean, for mm-hmm. himself at the hotel. If he never went into the room, we don't know whether or not he actually went into the room or not, but maybe getting the room there was, you know, potentially just another sort of step in his escape plan.
Right.
So that, you know, if whoever's following him is catching up to him, that he's staying one step ahead of them at all times. And he's just moving quickly. And when people are trying to stop him and like, oh, let's have a conversation about your car situation, he's just like, no, I don't have time for this. And if you're frantic and you're like, I got to keep moving. I don't have time to do this. You might say stuff to somebody that might come across as like, oh, this guy's not all there, but maybe he is all there. And he's just, his mind is moving a million miles an hour because he knows somebody's trying to kill him and mm-hmm. he's got to keep moving. Mm-hmm. And so to everyone else, it seems like, oh, something's, you know, wrong with this guy mentally, but maybe he's just literally trying to move as quickly as possible to stay ahead of whatever threat is coming.
It's also interesting going back to the fact that he was blaming his, you know, behavior sort of on the fact that he wasn't getting enough sleep. And then, you know, we don't even know if he made it into his hotel room. We don't know if he slept at all that night. So maybe it was really a decoy situation, or it could be in his head.
Could be a lack of sleep is creating, you know, mental health issues. I mean, you're not operating at full capacity without sleep. And he's been on this long trip and he hasn't really stopped. You know, we all know when you travel, you need like a day to recuperate just from like getting on an airplane and flying across mm-hmm. the country and showing up in another time zone. And it takes like a day to kind of acclimate yourself. And so it could be he's sort of mentally breaking down from exhaustion, you know, and not necessarily from, you know, some type of mental episode. But I'm not saying that that's not possible either, because we just don't know. But I think there's a couple different scenarios that could be playing out here.
I think just because of what happens, which we will obviously get to, it makes me more, I don't know, I lean more towards the idea that his paranoias were real and there might really have been someone after him.
We used to, from time to time, go do a little shopping at the mall, a little, you know, perusing, little pretzel here, little Wetzel Cinnabon there, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, stroll through the stores, you know, we just take our leisurely time while we, you know, buy some new clothes and things like that. But these days, the mall trips are a complete disaster. It is a stressful experience all the way around with a little toddler at her sides.
Bring her on the stroller.
Bring her in the stroller even, and she's grabbing at everything she can reach. Mm-hmm. She's demanding for some type of entertainment at all times. And I just want to get the hell out of there. It's just a nightmare. So
you've always hated the mall. And I hate the mall. Like, you just hate crowds. So do I.
I've hated the mall since I was like picking chicks up in high school. All right.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the only time I was like, okay. But even then I didn't like being there.
I did have a traumatic experience once at the mall in middle school. I dropped an entire venti coffee in the store. Like, I was dropped off. Oh, I felt like I was so grown up with my coffee. I dropped the whole thing and got on the shirts. There were ice cubes on shirts. I can never go back in.
Did they make you pay for it?
Nope. I just left in shame. I was too young. I probably didn't even have money to pay for it. Yeah. No. He cleaned it up and was nice, but it was just so embarrassing because my crush was there. But anyway, pretty much ever since, I've just hated them all. I've always hated them all because I hate crowds and I hate dressing rooms. And I just, I like the digital experience of seeing everything laid out for me. And
it's just more convenient.
It is.
To get it at your house. And
it is. I'm definitely an online
do it on your own
fan.
Time.
That's right. And that way I can find my exact sizing I need. I can filter for exactly what I'm looking for by color and everything.
You can fashion show for me.
Mm-hmm. I can fashion show for you. But really, I don't have the greatest sense of fashion. I'm really not into like following the latest trends. I have to ask Janelle all the time, like, hey, does this look okay? And she's like, dude, no, you can't mix those colors. Those clash. Anyway, that's why I like to use Stitch Fix. Now, I've been using Stitch Fix for years and it makes shopping easy. But I love having my Stitch Fix stylist because she really gets me. And especially since we've been working together for so long, she really knows what I'm going to like and what I'm not going to like. And I just love how easy Stitch Fix makes the whole shopping experience because they send you some picks that they think you're going to like with your budget preferences, your style in mind, your size in mind. And you just order boxes when you want to and how you want to. There's no subscription required, which is really nice. And along with your Just For Me pieces, you also get outfit recommendations and styling tips. You can keep what you love and send back the rest. It's so easy. It comes with a prepaid bag that's already labeled for the post office. You just shove everything in there, put it in the mailbox, and you're good to go. And the best part, guys, no stores, no crowds, no stress, no spilling your coffee in the middle of a store. Just personalized looks that you're going to love. And Stitch Fix makes it all so easy. Personal styling for everyone. Get started today at stitchfix.com/milehigher. That's stitchfix.com/milehigher.
After the interaction with the hotel employee, there were no more confirmed sightings of Blair Adams. However, there was two potential sightings that investigators would later rule out. The less likely sighting came from employees at the TNR truck stop on Deep Springs Road in Dandridge, who claimed they saw Blair at the stop between 9:30 and 10:30 p.m. According to them, Blair was flipping through tattoo magazines and talking to an unidentified man about Canadian money. Police likely ruled out this sighting as Dandridge was over 15 miles away from where Blair was last seen at the Fairfield Inn, and without a car, he'd have had to walk, and that's a pretty far distance to walk, especially in that time span. But he might have received a ride from the unidentified man, but this is still pretty unlikely considering what would happen later that night. But the other more credible sighting comes from a Cracker Barrel in Strawberry Plains, in which two women allegedly saw Blair eating with a man who has also never been identified. The woman's descriptions of the man differed. I think they tried to make it composite image.
Yeah, so this is another weird point of contention where most news sources who post this image say that this is a composite sketch of Blair done in Knoxville. But it's also like, why would you need a composite sketch of Blair when you have him?
Yeah.
So I came across a couple sources who actually said that this was a composite sketch of the man he was eating with, even though this drawing looks
a lot like Blair.
But it's still this whole composite image thing is pretty unclear, about where it actually came from.
Yeah, it makes it really frustrating.
But it's weird, though, that the police would rule out the Cracker Barrel sighting because the restaurant was within walking distance of the Fairfield Inn. And of course, after all this travel, he would have likely gotten some food since he really hadn't eaten anything substantial since he left his mother's house.
Yeah, as far as we know.
Right. Still, the next confirmed sighting of Blair comes from two construction workers on the morning of July 11th, 1996. The workers had arrived at the under-construction hotel across the highway from the Fairfield Inn when they saw a man lying down in the parking lot. Assuming that this man was possibly just a vagrant who had slept there during the night, the workers went over to check on him. In reality, they discovered Blair Adams, deceased, with thousands of dollars in Canadian, American, and German money scattered around the scene. Very bizarre.
So aside from the money that was scattered around the scene, additional dollar bills were stuffed into the pockets of his blue jeans. In fact, the owner of a siding company working on the site pocketed $110 from the scene, but did later have a conscience and gave it up to authorities. But Blair was also found naked from the waist down. Knox County Sheriff Jimmy J.J. Jones said that his pants had been removed, quote, like someone else pulled them down for him. Now, we have spent a lot of time discussing this. This is like such a strange way to describe this, because how would you really know what it would look like if someone's pants were pulled down by someone else versus just themselves?
Now, I wonder if this is another situation where the police are not releasing that much information, just because there might be something incriminating that's leading him to say that they're not telling us. But as far as I can tell, the only reason they're saying that is because his pants were somewhat inside out. But again, if, like we were talking beforehand, when I take my pants off at night, oftentimes they end up a little inside out. You know, I don't know if that alone is enough to determine that.
Right. See, my pants are always inside out when I take them off. Sometimes, as Josh pointed out, they're just inside out. all like while I'm wearing them.
That's crazy.
But yeah, it's just it's strange. I wish we had more information about why they came to that conclusion. But Blair's socks were also removed and they were laid on the asphalt, although some reporting says that his socks were stuffed into his shoes. So not really sure there. There's a lot of parts of this that just are murky. And also sets of keys, including the unused key to his hotel room, were just strewn around the scene. His shoes were off, and then one of them was placed under his head, quote, like a pillow, according to Sheriff Jones, which is also a very strange detail. We'll be circling back to that in a moment. But detectives also located Blair's black duffel bag containing maps and travel receipts and his unzipped fanny pack that contained nearly 5 ounces of gold bars, gold and platinum coins, jewelry, an additional set of keys, and a pair of sunglasses. Must have been a big fanny pack to fit all of that in there.
You can see it on the ground there. It's actually not that large.
These are 1 ounce bars. You got to think these are 1 ounce gold bars. They're not very big. They're just like little like two like credit cards
so
together.
So strange to be carrying them in like on your person like that. All of those things. But I guess if he's on the run. And
well, what are you going to do? Stuff them in your pockets? You need something to carry it in.
True.
And you want to keep it close to you. Mm-hmm. Right.
Don't want
to
leave it in the car. He's not leaving it in the hotel, or we don't even know if he went into the hotel room. So, yeah.
I was going to say the pants thing might also just be have piqued the detective's interest because of the location where he's found as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle, you know, in the parking lot.
Oh, well, yeah, for right? sure. The fact and that they're so, removed, it's odd.
Yeah. So maybe that's just to the extent of why they make a big deal about that. Or why would somebody just remove their pants at that location?
Well, I don't think it's strange that they made a big deal about him not having pants. I think it's strange that they believe they were removed by someone else. But yeah, maybe there is an explanation for that. But according to investigators, the contents of his fanny pack were untouched, which is really strange. You'd think that if he was robbed or anything like that, they would have taken that with them unless they just didn't think he'd have much in his fanny pack or had to get out of there quickly. But the autopsy later revealed that Blair had been struck in the stomach, very unusual, and the blow was so severe that it ruptured his stomach and sent him into septic shock. A weapon, potentially a club or a crowbar, had been used to slice open his forehead. And then autopsy also reported that Blair likely put up a fight. And his attacker had also ripped tufts of hair from his head, and his hands also were bloodied as if he had used them to defend himself. One cut was deep and blackened, not unlike road rash, or that it had been, quote, forcefully knocked to the pavement, according to the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation agent David Davenport. Investigators would later return to the nearby construction site to test various pieces of rebar and crowbars, but failed to identify a weapon used in Blair's murder. And what's interesting is that even though Blair had struggled with addiction in his past and randomly stopped showing up to his AA meetings before this trip to the U.S., his system was completely free of drugs and alcohol at the time of his autopsy, which I'm sure a lot of you were starting to go down that path, that maybe he had started using whatever substance again, and that maybe that had led to some of his behavior, especially leaving the AA meetings. But that's not the case, which makes this even stranger.
Plus, the only things found in his stomach were undigested pieces of meat, shrimp, and lettuce, indicating that he had eaten dinner in Knoxville the night before. Another strange item found at the scene was the keys to the rental car, which Blair couldn't locate the day before. Police later interviewed Gerald about his final interaction with Blair, and the whole ordeal upset him so much that he quit his job, which I'd like to know more about that interaction, because that
Me too.
That's pretty interesting. He didn't feel like police were directly blaming him for Blair's death, but he felt like they had cast some suspicions onto him, which made Gerald feel very uncomfortable given the circumstances.
Yeah, I can understand why he would feel that way.
Yeah. The only evidence not belonging to Blair was a long strand of hair they found in the palm of one of his hands. Police initially believed the strand of hair belonged to a woman. However, it's unclear why they made this determination. Was it just because it's a long piece of hair?
Yeah, it could have been.
I mean, there's men that have long hair as well.
Yeah, maybe they. I don't know.
There's another interesting element about the night Blair was killed. At around 3:30 a.m., a security guard heard a scream that he believed sounded like a woman. Investigators later attributed that scream to Blair, which led them to determine his time of death at 3:30 a.m. And again, let's go back to the hair found on his hand. Unfortunately, it didn't lead investigators anywhere. Some sources state that investigators could not obtain DNA from the strand as it did not contain a follicle. However, it seems like they were able to find a profile, they just haven't found a match. And this is likely because at the time of Blair's death, Tennessee did not collect DNA samples from everyone currently incarcerated or on trial. And as of the 2010s, it was one of just seven states that didn't adopt that measure. So if Blair's killer was ever incarcerated after 1996, they could have effectively, you know, hidden out while in prison and avoided the DNA match, which is very unfortunate because seems like, you know, that's our best chance at identifying who this person's hair was and potentially what that interaction was.
So from just the strand alone, where they were able to determine a profile, are they able to determine gender through just a profile?
That I'm not sure about. So again, this is just from the different reporting, specifically from that Knox News article.
Mm.
It stated that the reason they made the determination was only because the strand was long. You know, yeah. That's really it. But I do wonder, I'm not sure if they were able to get a profile, if that would lead them to be like, well, we don't know who it is, but we know it was a woman.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe that would explain that more.
So it looks like, if the strand of hair doesn't have the follicle on it, because you need the follicle in order to get a DNA profile.
Mesh, yeah.
But you can still get mitochondrial DNA from the hair shaft. Mitochondrial DNA is inherited maternally and can be useful in cases where nuclear DNA is not available or is degraded.
So can you determine gender?
Mitochondrial DNA from hair can be used to trace maternal ancestry lines.
Hmm.
So it seems like with the follicle, you can typically tell sex or gender. Without the follicle, no.
Yeah.
So
I don't think you can with mitochondrial DNA. But
so from what we know, it really sounds like they determined it was a woman based on the length, which is very strange. But I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. It's just some sources saying that they weren't able to that it didn't contain a follicle. So maybe they did. I don't know.
And again, that's mainly according to older sources. From most of the more contemporary sources, they either state that there was a follicle, like straight up, or they don't mention the presence of a follicle and they just say that they were able to get a profile. So it's kind of unclear like where exactly this DNA information is going to be coming from. And I do wonder, again, if this is all because like the police are not really releasing that much investigation because it's technically still open.
Right. It's always frustrating.
These days, we're all doing our very best just to remain calm. It's very hard. I must say, I really struggle every day not to go absolutely just nuts. I mean, with work, with a toddler running around, with all these animals running around, it is just absolute mayhem. And so one of my favorite ways to just find some zen at the end of the day or to start the day, I just pop out my phone, hit that calm app, and I just enter a whole other dimension of pure bliss and peace, and the whole world around me just completely shuts off. I mean, the Calm app has been one of my favorites for years, and I love all the different features that it has. It's got guided meditations to help you work through anxiety and stress, boost your focus, build healthier habits, and just take care of yourself. Love yourself. There's sleep stories, sleep meditations, and calming music. So once you're done listening to the Mile Higher episode, just pop that Calm app on if you're still awake, which some of you aren't. But if you are, Calm is there to help transition you to dreamland. There's grounding exercises to help you reset and relax and just, you know, help you bring it down a few notches. Because we're all trying to just get a little worked up, you know? You got to bring it down. Calm is there. There's also expert-led talks to teach you about improving your self-esteem, living a happier, healthier life, improving your relationships. I mean, it's got all of the tools you need all in one app, and it fits right in your pocket. That's right. Take it in the car. Take it on the plane. Take it to work. Take it wherever you want to go. That's the beauty of Calm. Calm has over 2 million five-star reviews, I'm one of the 2 million. It'll help you de-stress, relax, sleep more, and just live better. And we have an exclusive offer for you. Thanks for listening to this ad. Of course, I've got an offer for you. It's 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/milehigher. It's an amazing value. Go to calm.com/milehigher for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. calm.com/milehigher. And tell Calm you heard about them from yours truly. Sleep well.
So what about the theories here? Well, the leading theory, according to investigators, is that Blair was the victim of a sex crime turned deadly. Investigators believe that he was a victim of sexual assault before his death. However, it's unclear if this was due to any other supportive evidence aside from his pants being removed and the defensive wounds on his hand. Both of his hands, actually. But I wish we had more information, because that would be a good information to know. Because if it's just based on his pants being removed, I don't, especially with a blow to the stomach, I could see.
Well, I think, as we'll talk about in a second, I think it's also the locations as well. These locations, the Fairfield Inn, as well as the truck stop, which we'll talk about, are hotspots for sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to think the investigators are going off of their experience with the area, the known sex workers in the area. They've probably had other crimes that have occurred in these locations before. And so I think a lot of this just coming, to an outsider, we're like, oh, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But like to them who investigate mm-hmm. stuff in this area all the time and know the people in the area.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
That it would make sense that this would potentially be the leading theory.
I've noticed, like, if you look again on forum posts for just people positing their own theories about this, a lot of them will definitively say, like, there was a wound on Blair that was, like, sexual assault, like, as if something was put inside of, like, his anus or something. But the fact of the matter is like, I could not find an investigator ever saying that.
So where would they have gotten that information from?
That's what I'm saying, is I think a lot of this, like, I think you're more right, Josh, in that, like, this is more just like
circumstantial based on exactly. the location and what activities known to occur in this area,
as opposed to like that explicit ruling. So I really could not find like anywhere where an investigator themselves were saying that.
Interesting.
Yeah, because unless somebody got a hold of his autopsy report or something like that, which I don't think that's happened in this case, that's just pure speculation.
Well, Sheriff Jones believed that Blair tried to pick up a sex worker. However, instead of going through with the act, they attempted to kill and rob Blair since he had thousands of dollars on him, which is also weird to think about because they did leave the fanny pack. Maybe they didn't know it was in there, but I don't know if that was really a robbery. Seems like they left a lot behind, or they had to get out of there fast. I don't know. But investigators believe that the interaction could have begun in a vehicle and the initial struggle happened inside before the killer struck Blair on the head, threw him onto the road, and caused the fatal blow to his stomach with the car before driving away. So it's possible he was hit by a car, which I think would make maybe more sense. It's hard to, I mean, unless a crowbar or something like that was used, just a punch to the stomach, which is possible. Houdini, that is how he died. It's just you definitely don't hear of that very often, someone dying due to just being punched in the stomach. However, others, like Sheriff Jones, believes that the fatal injury came from a hard kick while Blair was already lying on the pavement. That'd be a really hard kick. But if Blair was tossed from the vehicle, that would explain why his various items, like the car keys, the pants, the socks, the bags, were just strewn all over the area. They could have thrown each item out of the car while searching his pants. But then there's some strange theories around the shoe being under his head, sort of as a pillow. And a lot of people online, so take it with a grain of salt, have theories that maybe someone with medical experience was either involved in the murder or discovered Blair before the police and elevated his head. And then maybe if someone came across him like that, propped his head up, but they didn't want to like get involved in the whole situation. But I think we all agree this seems pretty far-fetched. especially if it was, I mean, if someone killed him and they had medical experience and they wanted to cause injury to him like that, I doubt they would be like, oh, let me just make sure his head is propped up. I think it's more likely.
Well, they would have stayed there with him till an ambulance came.
Unless they were the killer.
Right.
But like, what killer would set you up like that before? Like, this doesn't make sense. I think if it really was someone outside of Blair, which we'll talk about next, that it was probably just some random person that, I don't know. But why would you even think to prop their head up? The whole, it's very weird. I think here's what makes the most sense. It's more likely that Blair, who was dying of septic shock, propped his own head up on the shoe as sort of a form of comfort, as it had been noted in with other cases with similar causes of death.
However, one major inconsistency is that if this resulted from a robbery gone wrong, why would there still be thousands of dollars left at the scene? In addition, he's got his gold bars, his jewelry, his coins. In any sort of robbery, especially a robbery turned homicide,
yeah,
they're going to take that with them. I mean, if you're going to that length to murder somebody, they're going to take all of that.
Unless they were interrupted.
Yes, unless it was interrupted and they were just planning on robbing him and not killing him. So I guess in either scenario, it could explain it. But I think in this one, if this was an armed robbery and they shot him, it would be very easy to just grab his shit and go.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that. And again, we can't definitively say if a robbery even took place. It's just a proposed theory. We never knew precisely what Blair had taken from the safety deposit box. We had no idea how much of that initial $6,000 in cash he had spent while on the road. There is a chance that the killers took some of what he had and left behind what the investigators ended up finding at the scene. We don't really know what he had to start with. But what about Blair's initial paranoia that coworkers from Germany were traveling to Vancouver to kill him? And for this theory, we really only have Blair's word on this. It's hard to believe that coworker beef would lead to a chase across international borders to kill a construction foreman. On top of that, it was never even confirmed that coworkers from Germany did return to Canada or who Blair was even talking about in the first place. And that's the biggest mystery here is if in fact there was an it here, a threat, what was that? Otherwise, is this all just in his head?
Mm-hmm.
That's the hardest thing about this. But while Blair's friends and family said that he did not exhibit any struggles with mental health leading up to his death, it is important to note that according to the Mayo Clinic, most men who have paranoid schizophrenia began exhibiting signs between their late 20s and early 30s, and Blair was only 31 at the time of his death, putting him right in that window. His actions, feeling like he was being chased, and all of his strange decisions could be explained by symptoms of paranoid schizophrenia leading up to his death potentially. However, if we were to take Blair's word as truth, perhaps he really was traveling to the Olympic Games with a large sum of cash to pay off someone with ties to his work in Germany. Maybe those other coworkers were coming to Canada to stop him, and Blair made those decisions to throw them off his trail. Then in Knoxville, he was either the victim of a crime of opportunity or these individuals, in fact, finally caught up with him and left his valuables because their main reason for chasing him was that they wanted him dead, potentially. And while researching this episode, we found an old forum post that said that taking someone's pants off after committing a crime against them has been done by some German crime organizations as a sign of disrespect. And Ian searched far and wide to find anything to confirm this, but doesn't sound like this is a real common practice, so that it's like reported
right
all over the place. But
well, and like you said when we were talking about it earlier, like I feel like that's just a sign of disrespect
across the board.
Yeah, anywhere.
Yeah,
there was in this forum post there was like a specific phrase associated with it, but then when you looked up the phrase, like it's just there's nothing tangible to link this to like a German mob style hit. So yeah, I just wonder if anyone knows, if someone's from Germany and they're like, nope, this is real, you know, let us know. That would be interesting.
Struggling a bit to come up with a motive for somebody to come after him to this extent, right? It is possible that when he was over in Germany, when he was apparently just working,
Yeah, and remember, a lot of them had bad interactions with him.
Yeah.
Some of his coworkers in Germany.
But even with, like, there must have been something else going on. Like, if it's to the extent that they're willing to come across
yes.
the world mm-hmm. to hunt him down, to kill him, what really happened over there?
Yeah, if that's really the case, there's a big piece of the puzzle that we're missing here.
You have to be something like involved in organized crime over there or mm-hmm. shady business dealings, you know, loan shark, something along those lines where, but then it's like, why at this time too? Why all of a sudden at this point, why didn't they just find him in Canada? You know, mm-hmm. what tipped him off to then leave Canada, and why'd he come to the U.S. Unless he was coming for the Olympic Games, or was he meeting up with them, with somebody there to hopefully fix the situation, and what communication, how'd they communicate with him? That's what I want to know. How do you even know the threat was coming? How do you even know to leave Canada in the first place?
What's also strange to me is I think if someone was coming after him and wanted him dead, you would think that they would have like stabbed him or shot him. I think it's strange to, I mean, we don't know exactly how they did it, but do this, you know, blow to his stomach. It just doesn't seem like a very sure way, unless they just wanted to beat him up and then didn't know that he would actually
right.
die.
I think that's a good point.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl. It's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl. Happy Friday. It's Jen. Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts. Like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Because it seems like that's kind of a risky way. If you're going to assassinate somebody,
you would want
that's
it.
A bit of a risky way to do it in a parking lot and where potentially people could see you.
And you don't know if that injury would actually have killed him.
Yeah.
So it's strange. There's also a part of me that wonders if maybe he ran into just the wrong person and his behavior was so odd that an interaction with someone just went bad. And
another idea is maybe somebody he encountered when he got to Knoxville figured out this guy's carrying a bunch of cash on him. And maybe they tried to set, maybe a pimp or something set him up with a sex worker, and then the interaction went bad or something like that, or he freaked out on the sex worker or something, and it just kind of all just happened all at once, and he ended up getting hit by a car and then beat and left. But then again, why not take the money? Why not take all of his valuables? If you're going to go to that extent to quote unquote punish him, why not take all that? But maybe they're just freaked out because they don't want to get caught, or this pimp doesn't want to get caught and shut down. And so something like that. I know that's a, you know, law enforcement in this case has said they even went and talked to pimps and prostitutes in this area that they knew of, and but nobody had anything to say about it. But maybe that's because they're covering up what happened. You know,
why would they say anything?
I do think, like, to that point, you know, there's that whole you know, the security guard who heard the woman scream at 3:30 and then investigators later said that that was Blair. Maybe it wasn't Blair. Maybe that really was a woman screaming because of whatever happened.
Whatever interaction.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. How would they have known for sure?
Right.
Oh, that's what, you know, cases like this are so interesting to me. They're so intriguing, but at the same time, they're so frustrating. They almost piss me off that we have no, I mean, it really could be any of these different things. And then to think about the fact that there really could have been no one after him, and this really could have been a mental health episode, and he just ran into the wrong person along the way. I don't know. It's just his behavior happening so abruptly, which of course you can have a mental crisis like this abruptly. It's just, it's weird that he had really gotten to a place in his life where he was sober for a long time. He was so even keeled and he just dropped off the face of the earth. And yeah, I think I lean towards maybe there really was someone after him and he just didn't want to tell anyone about it because he didn't want to put anyone in danger or embarrass himself or, you know, make his mother feel ashamed of something he did. I mean, it's just so hard to even speculate on all these things because we really, there's like nothing to work off of. It's so frustrating.
I think there's a possibility that, you know, this sort of like coworkers were truly returning from Germany. And that is what was kind of the catalyst. You know, these coworkers who he had issues with were coming back. And then that triggered whatever mental spiral he was going through, you know, this like real threat of like, oh, these guys who I have serious beef with, who I've like gotten into fights with. That real threat turned into this chase, you know, even if he invented it afterwards. I think there was a catalyst.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that is what happened. And maybe those guys from Germany didn't actually want him dead, but just wanted to teach him a lesson. And it just went further than they expected. I don't know. It's just so bizarre.
Or they were going to meet up at the Olympic Games for some reason.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, the Olympic thing is like so weird that just, I feel like just throws everything else off.
No. Well, in my mind, I'm like, people do travel from all over the world to go to the Olympic Games. So Team Germany is obviously there. So is that a reason for people to go there? But why did he end up in Knoxville? Because he doesn't know anybody there. There's no reason for him to be there. So why is he all of a sudden there? And where is he going from there?
Right. Where?
Why?
Where
why
plan
was
on
that
continuing on?
Yeah. What was the final destination? That's a mystery, man.
But anyway, Blair was buried in the Victory Memorial Park in his hometown of Surrey. His grave has the phrase "Abanju," meaning "to the good God," written on it. His mother, Sandra Edwards, passed away in 2020, and she never explained why she didn't tell the police about the Olympics connection, so certainly strange there. But when journalists tried to follow up on this statement, her husband responded to them by saying, chances of solving this case are remote as hell. We are not going to open that can of worms again, which I do understand to a degree, especially if it feels hopeless. You know, that's their right to not want to keep revisiting something that they don't feel like will be solved. Now, Sheriff Jones has described this case as the, quote, most interesting and strangest in his 38-year career, and that solving it has been a pipe dream for him for nearly 30 years. He later said, quote, if I could have one wish somewhere in a damn mayonnaise jar, I could find a note that tells me what happened just so I'd know. God, it would be so, so, so difficult as an investigator, as a detective, to spend so much time on a case like this for over 30 years and to not have those answers. I mean, I'm sure we can all, if you are a true crime consumer on a regular basis, I'm sure there's those cases that you're like, oh, I would do anything to know if there was one question I could ask. Imagine if that was your line of work, that you had been so immersed in it and you still didn't have those answers. I mean, it was just driving me completely nuts.
Definitely takes a special kind of person to work on cold cases, man.
Yep. Cold case unit investigator Debbie White said, quote, any lead, however big or small, can still be relevant. So if you have any information regarding the death of Blair Adams, please call the Knoxville County Cold Case Unit at 865-215-2675 or email coldcase@knoxsheriff.org. But yeah, really frustrating one, guys. I wish we had more information for you or more clarity on some of the points we went over here today, but that's really...
It's a lot of confusing events.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. But let us know your thoughts. Maybe you have some theories that we didn't even think about, or maybe you know more about the whole German pantsing thing. Because that is a strange element. The whole pants situation is very strange. And the shoe, there's just so many weird things. The car key, what was that? How did it end up at the scene in the end, but he couldn't find it at the dealership or at the rental place? I don't, it's just
was
so,
it in his fanny pack, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe he had it. He accidentally put the key in his fanny pack or something and then had the other key in his pocket. So when that whole interaction was like, oh, no, he was just confused because the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to really make out heads or tails with this one.
Yeah. And it's sad knowing that his last, you know, weeks really were just, or potentially longer if he was hiding it from people, were filled with such fear and paranoia and.
Yeah,
whether that was real or in his head, either way, it's just incredibly sad to think about.
It is. And the fact that whoever did this to him has never been held accountable.
Just got away with murder.
But, I mean, I'm hoping that potentially the DNA is, you know, been uploaded to CODIS or GEDmatch or something like that, and that hopefully one day this could be solved through the DNA if it in fact was uploaded already or is even still out there. I don't know. I'd assume that they've probably done that. Maybe they're just waiting for a match or something like that. But because there is some DNA here, I think there's always hope that, you never know, down the road cases get solved all the time.
Yep. Even the coldest of cases, there's still that hope there.
There is. But yeah, that's going to be it for us today. Thank you for joining us as always. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week with another one.